This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Ewart. Coming up, what's in a name? The wrangling continues over Cook Islands' identity.
Talk about them sailing the maka, sailing the ocean, using the stars, the moon, the sun, the ocean, knowing the birds, the clouds, the wind direction. And yet our name doesn't say that.
Feminists from around the Pacific gather to formulate a regional plan in the push for gender equality.
We need to learn to say no. As Pacific Islanders, we are so timid and we are growing up in a society where we like to please people. We need to judge what is really best for us.
And after Fiji's Roy Krishna's stellar season in Australia's A-League, which saw him end as top goal scorer and player of the year, how does the next big Pacific talent break into the big time?
The Phoenix look to score their second through. Krishna! Roy Krishna has the Phoenix season scoring record all to himself. 17 now this season for Roy Krishna.
Those stories to come later in the program. But first, there are calls for improvements to the tsunami warning systems in Solomon Islands. This after a tsunami rumour sparked panic in the capital, Honiara, this week, with schools closed and people fleeing to higher ground. Thousands of Honiara residents were affected as police and authorities tried to reassure the public that there was no tsunami approaching. Evan Wasuka reports.
The central market is located at Honiara's foreshore. It was here that strong winds kicked up higher than usual swells, which swept into the market on Tuesday. Marketgoers fled the area and panic set in. Mary was standing at a roadside market near Chinatown, about half a kilometre away.
Everyone at the main market just ran for their lives, coming this way to the market, and then they were screaming tsunami, so it was like a chain reaction. Everybody just jumped around.
She said panic ensued.
I wanted to find out information whether it was true or not, so I was ringing around trying to get NDC, people that actually could give me the information, because anyone around were like a shook.
When calls started coming in, we started to think about what is going on, what is happening, because actually we do not make any, and we did not make any warnings at all. There was no any earthquake.
Manoa Tepa is acting chief forecaster at the meteorological office. He's responsible for sending out warnings on earthquakes and tsunamis. Mr. Tepper ended up going on air on Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation to reassure the public and tell them that there was no tsunami.
I was really worried because people may jump into some accidents while panicking and running here and there.
But by that time, the story had spread like wildfire across Honiara.
And then there was somebody who posted it on the Facebook, and then it basically went viral. And everybody was basically responding to the fake news as it was a real news. So everybody in the landslide were going up the hills. They were going up to where they have the higher grounds. School kids went up. Even workers went up. So people were actually struggling. They're actually struggling to climb up the hills.
Robert Iroga is a journalist and owner of the Solomon's Business magazine. He says schools were closed and students moved to higher ground.
There was a lot of panic, and even at the hospital, patients also tried to escape from the hospital, but fortunately they were told that that wasn't the true news, so they stayed on. Otherwise, it could have been a lot more disaster had they attempted to go outside.
As a journalist, Mr. Iroga says he's alarmed at how fast information spread on social media and affected thousands.
How our people responded to the fake news was very concerning, because they have bypassed all the legitimate sources of information, and they have responded quite crazily to what is later found out to be fake news.
In cases of tsunamis, warnings are broadcast on national radio, through SMS text, and on social media. But Mr. Iroga says authorities need to put in place sirens to warn the public.
It begs the question of Honiara or our main centres need to create alarms whereby it can only be turned on if there's a tsunami warning or there's a tsunami by those in authority. For instance, if it can only be turned on by those, the NDMO or those at the Met office, meteorological office. So that itself, it comes from the legitimate people or people in authority who are supposed to give the right information.
That's Robert Iroga, journalist and owner of the Solomon Business magazine based in the capital, Honiara, and the reporter there, Evan Wasuka. Advocates pushing for Cook Islands to change its name say they're working on a compromise. This in the face of a backlash from Cook Islanders living overseas. As Jordan Fennell reports, rather than dropping the country's English name, the plan now is to add a traditional name in the Cook Islands Maori language.
Cook Islanders have spent the past 2 months submitting their ideas for renaming their country to the Cook Islands Name Change Committee. That's led to 192 options that the committee has to narrow down to just one. Danny Mataroa, the committee chairman, says the best ones have to be easy to pronounce, have a story, and have a connection to their Cook Islands heritage.
There's one that comes to mind right now is Atea. Simple. It means the whole kingdom of God is here. On our island, the whole vastness, the ocean, the skies, the heavens above, the mountains, the birds, everything. It's like the Garden of Eden.
Pa Upokotini, also known as Queen Pa, is a traditional queen in Rarotonga and started the push to officially change the English name this year. The 72-year-old says she's been waiting long enough to see this happen.
I feel that it's timely now. It's time that we need to, have our own local traditional name.
Mr. Mataroa says it's time Cook Islanders show they mean business when talking about keeping their culture alive.
We, at this time in our history, we've been self-governing for 50 years. We should be old enough to make our own decision and change.
But in March, when the news of the potential name change travelled around the world, the overseas communities of Cook Islanders were firmly against the idea. Farina Tuaiti is the culture leader at the Cook Islands Community Services Victoria, based in Melbourne, and says her community voiced their concern.
Yeah, we all, like, within our community here in Melbourne, we have a small Cook Island community too, like, how we all get together, go to church and all that. No one agreed. We all thought that was stupid. We thought, what are they thinking? Think that they should focus on better things than trying to spend time to fight or to get a name change?
She says that the Cook Islands name is now part of their identity.
I think it's really wrong. We've been known as the Cook Island for so many years, and we're just so used to having Cook Islands and to change it, and I think it's a wrong move.
Due to the pressure from these communities, the traditional leaders have decided to leave the English name as it is and instead just add on a traditional name. But Ms. Tuaiti says she is against the idea of any name change and says the Cook Islands government should be spending their time and money on more important issues like healthcare.
You notice that a lot of people from the Cook Islands, like, diabetes and all this stuff and the sickness, most of them are transported to New Zealand. Why? Because the Cook Islands don't have the equipment. They lack on their health, like in the hospitals and all that.
Despite the pushback, Mr. Mataroa says there is support for an additional traditional name, and after approval from the Name Change Committee, a proposal and budget for the project has been submitted to the Cabinet for further approval. If it gets the go-ahead, the next step will be to decide the process of how the name will be ratified. And although the idea of a referendum has been floated, Mr. Mataroa prefers consultations with the individual constituencies.
The choosing of the name still comes down to the committee, and that's going to be taken out all around the 25 constituencies in the Cook Islands, the 12 inhabited islands.
He says even though they may potentially get a new additional traditional name, he will never stop fighting to change the English one.
We talk about them sailing the waka, sailing the ocean, using the stars, the moon, the sun, the ocean, knowing the birds, the clouds, the wind direction, and yet our name doesn't say that.
Danny Mataroa, chair of the Cook Island Name Change Committee. Ending that report from Jordan Fennell, I'm Richard Hewitt, and you're listening to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. A group of more than 150 women from around the region have spent 3 days this week in Fiji working on the foundations of what they hope will become a feminist movement for the Pacific. As Gemma Piali reports, delegates at just the second Pacific Feminist Forum have shared stories of struggle while working to find ways to overcome common challenges and secure the ultimate aim of gender equality.
Under the banner Sustaining Solidarity, Resistance and Revolution, feminists and human rights defenders are enforcing the principles they created during the inaugural Feminist Forum back in 2016. One of those principles states, feminist solidarity should be based on mutual respect, honesty and open discussion of differences. Nalini Singh is the Executive Director of the Fiji Women's Rights Movement and a member of the Pacific Feminist Forum Working Group. She says this is a unique opportunity to discuss challenges in a safe and open way.
As feminists and women human rights defenders, there are very limited opportunities in the Pacific region for us to convene and have this discussion. So, which is why the Pacific Feminist Forum is an event that we have committed to having every 2 years so that we at least get the space to talk about these issues and to strategize in terms of what can be done in the immediate and what can be actioned as something that we need to work on for the future.
While the Pacific faces a unique set of complexities due to the range of diverse cultures and barriers to resources, the Fijian Minister for Women, Children and Poverty Alleviation, Merasini Vuniwanga, says this forum is about putting a spotlight on women's capabilities. And as chief guest, she opened the event with a welcome speech.
This is truly an important opportunity. It is an uplifting and inspiring opportunity. This forum is truly a celebration of the contributions that women Pacific Islanders make in every aspect of life.
Angus Titus has been involved with the feminist movement since she was a young woman and has travelled the world to attend forums. She was a member of the Bougainville Transitional Government and works at the Nazareth Centre for Rehabilitation. Now in her 60s, she would like to see more solidarity at home.
We have organizations which are led by women in Bougainville, but we see that big organization needs to collaborate more with us, the different women's organizations, and maybe organize something like what we are going through right now. In that way, the women of Bougainville can know about the different work that the different women's organizations do, and that can really be solidarity for us.
The Feminist Forum has included workshops on practical advocacy and lobbying styles for organizations and on better ways for groups to communicate with each other.
The Fiji women, for example, have taught us that they can prepare for disasters. They can see the warnings, their early warning signs. And so us in Bougainville, we've taken that and we've adopted that in our own situation. This method of, just communicating information to other women has helped us very much.
Bernadette Hannitz is also from Bougainville, and she says she has learnt that collaboration is key.
The women we work with in Bougainville, they come from very remote areas in Bougainville, and it's a challenge for them. Like, some of them cannot speak English. When I go back home, it's done in the language that we speak, so it's easy.
For Angus Titus, one of the biggest takeaways is about standing up for herself and for her fellow women.
One of the biggest points that we've learned today is that we need to say no also. We need to learn to say no. As Pacific Islanders, we are so timid and we are growing up in a society where we like to please people. We need to judge what is really best for us.
Gemma Piali with that report on the latest Pacific Feminist Forum, which wrapped up this week in Fiji. Now, soccer in the Pacific has taken giant strides in recent weeks, with New Caledonia Sienghen defeating local rivals Magenta in the first ever All-Pacific Islands OFC Champions League final. And then Fijian international Roy Krishna won the Johnny Warren Medal, the prize awarded to the Player of the Year in Australia's A-League. Now, the hope is that Krishna's recognition will open the way for other talented players from the islands to make their way into Australia's professional ranks. But exactly how do you make that happen?
The winner of this year's Johnny Warren Medal is Roy Krishna.
And as Roy Krishna stepped up to collect his award after the thank yous, he offered this simple message.
If you work hard, dreams do come true, so thank you.
And after Krishna's dream came true, the benchmark has been set. Former New Zealand international and former OFC vice president Fred de Jong is in no doubt there is more than one Roy Krishna in the islands. And now he says it's time for OFC to bang the drum.
I don't know that they can bring pressure, but I think they can certainly encourage, especially at FFA and New Zealand football level, and just keep up a dialogue to try and encourage these countries to open up their regulations, because the easier it is for the movement of these players, obviously the better.
Ernie Merrick, who as coach of Wellington Phoenix recruited Roy Krishna into the A-League, wants to see a dedicated visa slot created that would enable A-League clubs to each recruit one player from the islands.
To be the top goal scorer in the A-League, coming from where he's come from, is just truly exceptional. And there are so many talented athletes in the Pacific region that you just have to look at the number of rugby league and rugby union players, for example. So if soccer gave them the same opportunity, I think there'd be so many come through.
Fred de Jong points to the existing state of play in New Zealand, where in the semi-professional national league, such a visa system already exists.
In New Zealand, we've now got the import ratio 6-1, one Oceania player. So if the A-League would do something like that, man, that would instantly make the Pacific players much more accessible.
But former Cook Islands national coach Drew Sherman, who's now the man in charge of youth development at the A-League club Brisbane Roar, doesn't believe that dedicated visa places are actually the answer.
To create an artificial sense where 11 clubs for the next season could potentially take one Oceanian player, well, are there 11 Oceanian players that are at that level? Are we actually creating an artificial market for them and a false sense of hope that long-term isn't going to benefit the best of them?
As the A-League apparently moves towards independence from Football Federation Australia, Sherman believes restrictions on player recruitment would be lifted and clubs would be able simply to target the best. Or perhaps, as Fred de Jong suggests, take a chance on a player like PNG international Tommy Semi, who's made a huge impact in New Zealand and would appear ready to step up to another level.
He's a proven goal scorer at New Zealand Premiership level now, and I think he's got the raw materials to go further. Still very young, he's a guy that, in the right environment, I think could do really, really well.
While arguing for dedicated visa slots, Ernie Merrick also wants to see structural development in the island countries. He says the prospect of both PNG and Fiji launching professional leagues is exactly what's needed to provide player development in the vital mid-teenage years.
Technically, they're all very good. Their ability to control a ball, pass a ball, their speed is phenomenal. Agility, all the physical aspects, technical aspects are there. It's really the strategic areas, but it's really about having a regular competition of such a high standard that it challenges everyone.
And Fred de Jong argues that at junior level, players from New Zealand and Solomon Islands, who will be going to the Under-17 World Cup later this year, are actually on a par with many of the bigger countries. It's at the next stage in the move into professionalism where the gap starts to appear.
The gap gets very big very quickly. The European players are playing at big clubs, and in the next 2 or 3 years, their progress just skyrockets, and we can't match that.
Drew Sherman says success for the Solomons on the world stage would do the islands cause a lot of good at a time when he believes momentum on the soccer fields of the Pacific is growing.
There is starting to be that track record of success, and no longer can clubs turn a blind eye to the nations. Those younger players, if they go and put themselves out there on a true world stage, a World Cup, a World Club Championships, then of course professional clubs are going to sit up and take note.
And that next wave includes Sarpreet Singh at Roy Krishna's club Wellington Phoenix. Singh has Indo-Fijian heritage, but born and brought up in Auckland, he had a clear pathway to the A-League, unlike players in the islands. So, should another Roy Krishna get his chance, Drew Sherman says they'll have to do it the hard way, just like Krishna himself did.
Captain by Roy Krishna! It is a hat-trick for Roy Krishna! And he might just have sealed it for Wellington!
Golden Boot winner and Player of the Year Roy Krishna in A-League action with Wellington Phoenix, and you're listening to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. Now, for many young Pacifica people living in Australia, there's a wide gap between their islander roots and everyday life in the suburbs. It's a gap that is often blamed for causing social disengagement that leads to low school completion rates and an overrepresentation in the youth justice system. But a 10-week pilot program in the state of Victoria is working to break that chain by teaching young people how to cherish their heritage.
These young Pacifica people are busily replicating a cornerstone practice of their cultural heritage. They're not on the islands, though. They're actually in a wide open field on the southeastern fringe of Melbourne.
So you're good, guys? Yeah?
That's obviously.
We call it a umu in Samoan. And the Māoris call it a hangi, cooking on heated rocks, seal up all the food when the rocks are hot, and the steam cooks the food, and then once it's all cooked, yeah, we all eat together. So it's a very communal approach.
Temese Lelua is the program development leader of a state government-funded project for Pacifica youth called Lumana, which means empower.
So as you can see, we've got the fire happening already, the rocks are getting heated. Once the whole fire sort of dies out a bit, then they'll spread the rocks, pour all the food on it, cover it all up, make sure it's sealed so the steam and the heat stays in. and the food will slowly cook. We've got some chicken, we've got some roasting fowls, we've got some fish. I think we've got a couple of big snappers in to go in. And our yams, the boys are scraping the yams, the tara over there. They're having a go at making coconut cream now, just over here.
So we're just filling the taro leaves with coconut and onion. It's a bit tricky. It looks simple, but it's not as simple as it looks. Yeah.
And this can go with anything that you want to eat with.
This is what they basically eat every day.
What does it taste like?
Like nice and sweet.
We have what we call the plantation analogy. So looking at preparation of the land, preparation of the plantation, going in and weeding, preparing the soil. Like they do back in the islands, they'll plant the seed, plant yams, taros, and then obviously cultivate and make sure that it all grows. Parents tend to talk about their lived experience back in the islands. Young people find it hard to understand what they're talking about because different context, different way of life here in Australia. So the project in itself tries to find the parallels.
My name is Ilya Maraiulu and I come from the village of Hawaii Fanalili, and I am in year 8. In the Pacific Islands, our people are very resourceful and self-reliant. One of the ways this is shown is through the plantation. They wake up early every morning, get their tools and get prepared and ready to go to the plantation. We can learn a lot from the plantation life and apply it to our school experiences. Like them, we have to wake up early for school and get our tools ready, our uniform, school bag, books, and lunch. We can think of ourselves as the seed and the ground and the soil or ground as school. An important job of the plantation is to cultivate, which means to nurture and to help grow.
Then you add a bit of water, or you don't add water, you just squeeze it tight with your hands, get all the juices out.
Invited to share the feast are parents, teachers and elders from the local Pacifica community. Among them is James Henry, who's not only the president of the Cook Islands Association of Australia, but is also a dad.
I'm honoured and privileged for him to be involved, and that's why we're here. Just want to come here and look forward to see how's my son's doing and what he has learned from the program, and I believe that's also something that will be part of his life, not only knowing his own culture but knowing the culture of the whole Pacific Islands, to know who they are, where they come from and where they're heading. Most of our kids are born here. To know your culture, then you know how to respect others.
And then you use what we call a kawanga. Who wants to have a go?
Yep.
This stuff goes to the chickens or the pig.
Erin Loudon is the student engagement leader from Hampton Park Secondary College, who says already the program's delivering tangible proof of its benefits.
So I guess having that informal mentoring every week has been really crucial for some of the kids going through adversity. Not only that, but that regular celebration and acknowledgement of where they come from and where they're going, and the importance of having a plan and setting goals and finding that sense of belonging in a community that differs to theirs, but it acknowledges where they come from, which is so, so important. We have a look quite in depth at the different things that make up the student's identity. So they, I guess, attendance has increased, their engagement and motivation levels have increased, and their connection to staff across the school has also had a really positive influence since the program started.
And the reporter there was Susie Rains from the Pacific Mornings team. And the Lamana Pacifica project is run through the Centre for Multicultural Youth. And you can find out more about it at their website, cmy.net.au. And that's it from this edition of Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. Join us again at the same time next week for more news and views from around the Pacific. Or if you'd like to hear the program on demand, then do subscribe to our podcast at your usual provider. I'm Richard Ewart, and as always, many thanks for listening.